Teddy Roosevelt and political cartoons were a match made in heaven. Roosevelt was very popular and so full of energy you thought he might pop any minute. He was president before newspaper photography had matured, and that made him fodder for the illustration of choice back in those days, the cartoon. Rick Marshall has a new book out titled Bully, The Life and Times of Theodore Roosevelt, that's illustrated with more than 250 vintage cartoons. Rick's the author or editor of 65 books, and he speaks at the Kansas City, Missouri Public Library tonight as part of the library's ongoing President Series. Rick Marshall, welcome. Nice. So good to have you.
Glad to be here. Thank you.
I was going to begin by asking you why Teddy Roosevelt, but you know, maybe the better question is, you know, why not Teddy Roosevelt, right?
Yeah, why not Teddy Roosevelt? He was, well, with the election a few days away.
Yeah.
I'm urging everyone I can to write his name in because
we've never, he'd be a better choice in some ways, eh?
Never had anyone like him.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was irresistible to cartoonists, and he went out on top. You know, he was a very popular president, the right man at the right time.
He was so popular, in fact, I just boning up on him last night, that he actually handpicked his successor, William Howard Taft, and America went along with it because Teddy picked him.
Yeah, barely went along with it. He had to work hard not to be renominated at the 1908 convention. In 1904, he said he would not run 4 years hence, so he's immediately a lame duck. Mm. Didn't do him favors, but he was still popular. A lot of the party wanted him. A lot of the old guard resented him.
Why didn't Teddy want to go for four more years?
Well, he had virtually two terms because he became president when McKinley died.
He was assassinated, right, in Buffalo, I think.
In Buffalo. Yeah. So he was president, would have been president for 7.5 years, which he considered virtually two terms. And it sort of haunted him, that statement, because when he ran for president in 1912 on a third-party ticket—
He came back, tried to make a comeback,
A lot of people reminded him, of course, of that statement, but he said, look, when someone says, I don't want another cup of coffee, it doesn't mean the rest of his life. You know?
That's a good way to put it.
But he was very popular. And look, when he went out, he was younger than most presidents are when they took office. And he did so many things in his life. He's about the only president we have about whom you can say in the biography that the presidency was just one aspect of his life, not the main thing. He was a great president, but—
Was he our youngest president ever?
Yes.
When he was sworn in?
Younger than Kennedy, yeah.
Yeah. Age 42, I believe,
that's
right?
That's right, yeah.
And you say in this book something very interesting, that if he had run for a third term, the world might have avoided World War I. Is that right?
Yeah. That's something the publisher put on the flap, and I was frankly glad to go along with it. He listen, here's one way to look at it. He was he's our only president regarded as great by consensus who didn't have a war or a severe domestic crisis to thrust him into greatness. And part of that is, you know, Lincoln was the great emancipator. I call Roosevelt the great anticipator. He was proud of the fact, you know, he was a soldier and he had the Congressional Medal of Honor and everything, but he was proud of the fact that a shot was never fired by our military in aggression, you know, when while he was president.
Right.
And he pulled the plug on a lot of incipient foreign crises. And economically, he looked over the horizon and he saw, you know, America that was dividing, and there were antagonisms, and there was a move towards socialism and even anarchy. McKinley was shot by an anarchist.
Yeah.
And he just anticipated a lot and solved it. So that's one reason he was able to go out on top and have that record. And in World War, you know, in 1914, it is plausible to believe, and he wrote shortly thereafter what he things he would have done. He would have reminded the belligerents that there were treaties and America was signatory to some treaties, and he would have demanded, and we would have been strong enough to back that up and ask for a cooling off period, et cetera, et cetera. And we only learned 50 years after some of the crises he, like Germany wanted to go to war over Northern Africa trade policies in 1904 and 5. And he intervened, and it was all behind the scenes. It only came out in the 1950s.
Really?
So he might have been able to step in, but he sure would have tried, not like Wilson.
We're visiting with Rick Marshall about his new book, Bully, The Life and Times of Theodore Roosevelt. He speaks tonight at 6:30 at the Kansas City, Missouri Public Library, the Plaza Branch. More information, kclibrary.org. You know, you mentioned there's so many different aspects to this man's life where the presidency was just one of them, and it's so true about Teddy Roosevelt. You know, one of those aspects was that he was a rough rider back in the 1880s. What was a rough rider, and why was he so good at being a rough rider?
Well, you know, he was born in New York City to privilege. His family was one of the old line rich families in New York. He went to Harvard. He's a sickly kid. He built up
very
his body.
Sickly kid.
Yeah, that's right. His father changed the second floor of their brownstone into a gymnasium, and he said, "You have the mind, but you don't have the body. You have to work on the body." And he did. And in 1884, on February 14th, his mother and his wife died within hours of each other in the same house of different diseases. I mean, it was bizarre and it was devastating. His wife in childbirth. And he wrote out the political campaign, his duties in the legislature and at the Republican convention. And then he gave it all up and went out west to the Badlands of Dakota, North Dakota. And was a cowboy for 2-3 years.
He did that why? To prove something to himself, or was it more than that?
Well, even that's multifaceted. He did it as a business enterprise. He wanted to be a rancher and raise cattle, and refrigeration cars were new, and they had just connected to Medora, between Medora and Chicago. So he did it partly as a businessman, as an investment, but partly, as we might guess if we were in the situation he was in, just to escape, to live the lonely life. He used the phrase at the time that dark care doesn't travel with a rider who rides fast enough. And he would go out sometimes for 40 hours at a time and just ride the range and look up at the heavens and just he cleansed his soul. But at the same time, he completed the building of his body. He established law and order. He chased thieves, and he was a rancher, not a cowboy. But he did the work of his own cowboy crew.
Yeah,
and he toughened his body, and that's where he got the idea of a Rough Rider unit. And he kept his friendships. And anytime there was a foreign crisis, he checked with all his boys, as well as his polo playing friends from Harvard and everything. Would they be willing to fight as a regiment in wherever, Mexico, wherever there was a flash?
San Juan, Cuba, yeah.
And then it turned out the Spanish-American War came. He was Assistant Secretary of the Navy then, and he arranged for Dewey to go to the Philippines. We wouldn't have had that smashing victory if he hadn't sent that order. And then he resigned and joined the Army and was permitted to raise a regiment. And he did, and the public, the newspapers dubbed it the Rough Riders, Roosevelt's Rough Riders.
Yeah.
The rest is history. I mean, he braved death, and he was a real hero.
You know, what struck me about the cartoons that are so beautifully recreated in this book is just how elaborate so many of them are. You know, Rick, I mean, you know, many of them are works of art so different from what we see today, because today's cartoons, you know, tend to be they emphasize simplicity, it seems to me. These are just beautiful, so many of them anyway.
Yeah.
Why is that? Why the distinction? Why the difference?
I call it a perfect storm. He was a perfect subject for cartoonists. He was bigger than life, and the eyeglasses and the mustache and the teeth. And, you know, he didn't walk, he ran. He didn't just speech, he gesticulated. And he was a magnet for caricaturists and cartoonists.
Yeah. And he didn't mind it too much either, did he?
No, he loved it. He kept a scrapbook, even of his the cartoons that were against him. He took immense joy in that. It wasn't just the spotlight. He enjoyed everything, as a matter of fact. But at the same time, shortly before his era in politics, woodcuts were the only way that drawings could be reproduced. Mm-hmm. Very laborious, cartoonists would draw it on paper or on the wood block, and then an engraver would do it meticulously, and it was really a pain in the neck. There were some great cartoons, but when Roosevelt came in, there were magazines like Puck and Judge that were reproduced as lithographs, and the cartoonist could draw right in the stone, and then they were reproduced. And these were national magazines. There were a lot of them, political cartoon magazines weekly. So the technology was such that all this could happen. And then the newspapers with photo engraving coming in, artists could just draw on a piece of paper, and then that would be transferred to the printing plate. So at Roosevelt's time, well, Roosevelt was president, you know, there were 16 daily newspapers in New York City. Every city had a lot of newspapers, and they were all overtly political. You always knew the politics of a paper in those days, and a lot of them ran cartoons on the front page. So you had this great subject, you had the technology that allowed cartoons, and who can resist cartoons? So, gee, everything came together.
You know, Rick, the Smithsonian has said that you are the owner of the largest private collection of cartoons and comic book memorabilia. Where do you store all that?
Well, just
in the file cabinet at the office, or
in my house, which looks like the Library of Congress with a bed in the corner, and several storage units. It fills. It's a way to get a handle on it. Fills 2 40-foot vans.
Wow.
My collection of newspapers and magazines and original art and just all this stuff. And it's not just Roosevelt. It's I used to be a political cartoonist.
Yes, I was going to ask.
I'm a collector, so I've always had an interest in cartoons and in Roosevelt. I named my son for Roosevelt, so it's been a lifelong project.
You got hooked as a kid. How? What happened that got you going on it?
I don't remember exactly. I don't know how the affection started. I mean, we all are taught to love Lincoln and admire Lincoln. And with Roosevelt, when I was a kid, his reputation was a little in decline. He was like this, this guy who dressed up like a cowboy and charged up an imaginary hill. And all right. That was the book on him, you know. And he was sort of regarded in the middle level of the presidents in ratings. And gradually his reputation has come back. With me, not to be corny, this is not corny, but I was attracted to this historical figure who wreaked integrity and was patriotic and said what he thought. I mean, the more I studied him, the more I thought this is a one in a kind in American history. And he just intrigued me more and more, and I admired more and more, and just snowballed.
And as a kid, you met some very well-known cartoonists and sort of hung with them a little bit, which got you going.
Yeah, that was a blessing. I grew up in the New York area, and cartoonists are the most generous people around, and I was encouraged in my drawing and also then got to meet a lot of the legends. And on the Roosevelt side, I got to know his daughter, Princess Alice.
Really?
She was still around when I went to college in Washington, D.C., so that was a treat to know a lot of the personality things about him that never wound up in books, you know.
You know, I met Julie Nixon Eisenhower. In fact, had lunch with she and David Eisenhower once, and it was my first glimpse into maybe what Pat Nixon might have been like, because you can sense over the course of an hour, you get little indications of you know, families and what they're like. And I thought that was just so interesting for me to have that chance to meet with someone like that.
Yeah, that's great. You can't always know it. Some people don't want it known, and some just don't think the rest of us are interested in it, but we are.
You know, the other theme that comes through this book when it comes to Teddy Roosevelt, Rick, is just how many cartoonists drew him as so much larger than life. He just leaps out of these panels in so many cases because he was such a presence everywhere he went. Am I right?
Yeah. He was the cartoonist's favorite fallback during those years. I mean, even the opposing cartoonists. You know, with other presidents, he's the most caricatured of all our presidents.
Wow.
And a reason for that is his personality and why the cartoonists love to draw him, even on slow news days. Okay, what would Roosevelt do? What would he do? What would he have done? You know, but other presidents, FDR, Johnson, I mean, anyone you can name who's colorful and controversial, very often the cartoonists would caricature them. But they would caricature draw Uncle Sam to represent mm-hmm. their policies, or the elephant or donkey.
Yeah.
In Roosevelt's case, it was invariably Roosevelt himself. Hmm. It was too much fun to resist.
Now, you once said that you regard your collection and so many of these cartoons as some of your best friends.
Yeah. Well, I do. I've lived with them all. I feel privileged to have this collection because the stuff, these newspapers and magazines produced by the millions were discarded. They're very scarce today.
Mm-hmm.
So I've got to know them, and I feel privileged in discovering them and everything. But one of the toughest jobs in doing the book was I went through about 20,000 cartoons
mm-hmm.
to come down to almost almost 300. And it was almost painful to not run some of the ones that were just funny or prescient or clever. I mean, you know, on and on. Had to make the cut, though.
Rick Marshall again speaks this evening at 6:30 at the Plaza branch of the Kansas City, Missouri Public Library. More information at kclibrary.org. His new book, Bully, The Life and Times of Theodore Roosevelt, illustrated with more than 250 vintage political cartoons. And Rick, so good to have you. Enjoy your time in Kansas City.
Thank you very much, Steve.